I think it's one of the fundamental principles of a conservative to have a respect and commitment to the dignity of human life, both the born and the unborn.
That's the voice of Senator John McCain, another presidential hopeful, another one of the top three front runners in the GOP ticket, talking about how important the issue of life is, the protection of the born and the unborn, to being a conservative. We're talking during this audio open lines about the positions on abortion of the various candidates, particularly the GOP candidates like Rudolph Giuliani, who at the very least is distinguishing himself from many of the others running for president in the GOP ticket by holding a pro-choice position. Now, Senator John McCain is not as pure as the driven snow when it comes to the life issue. He supports embryonic stem cell research and federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. So if he does believe that protection of the born and the unborn is integral to being a conservative, he needs to either qualify his conservatism or change his position on embryonic stem cell research. But it does raise an interesting question for you as a voter. Are you a single-issue voter? There are people who will not vote for Rudolph Giuliani if he emerges from the primaries, or in the primaries for that matter, because he is pro-choice. There are people who will not vote for John McCain, either in the primaries or afterwards, because he has compromised on embryonic stem cell research. They're both life issues. They're both essentially, ethically, the same issue at the very heart. Destroying innocent human life, either precociously, either at a whim, or to quote-unquote save a life. Is that the issue that matters most to you, or is it the make-it-or-break-it issue for you? Is it the one where you say, look, I'm not going to vote for him, I can't do it, or are you willing to say there are a bunch of other issues at play here that may balance out my concerns about a pro-choice candidate, and I might be able to hold my nose because of those other concerns, because of those other issues, and vote for him anyway? So are you a single-issue voter when it comes to the life issue? I want to hear from you. We're coming to you live this Thursday, the 10th of May. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio, issues@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines this Thursday, the 10th of May. So how big an issue will abortion be during the presidential race of 2008 for Republican candidates? Here's an interesting interview with two political consultants from National Public Radio on that very subject.
Another issue that came up in the debate that has proved somewhat problematic for at least two of the candidates is abortion, the candidates being Mitt Romney and Rudolph Giuliani. Mitt Romney's been accused of flip-flopping on the issue of abortion. Let's listen to how he responded in the debate last night.
Well, I've always been personally pro-life, but for me it was a great question about whether or not government should intrude in that decision. And when I ran for office, I said I'd protect the law as it was, which is effectively a pro-choice position. About 2 years ago, when we were studying cloning in our state, I said, look, we have gone too far. It's a brave new world mentality that Roe v. Wade has given us, and I changed my mind.
Kelly Hurst, do you hear Mitt Romney giving an answer there that would be satisfying to voters in New Hampshire?
I'm not sure. I think for some it could be and some not. He did say in that, quite clearly, I changed my mind. And I think that that's fair. I think that we all change our minds. Others might say, well, isn't that politically convenient? Well, yes, it is. He also said that he was personally pro-life. However, he believed that leaders in government should uphold the law, which is currently a pro-choice law. That's something I think in true Mitt Romney form, in true politician form, he really walked both sides of the fence. It's really going to be tough to tell, and time will see if Republican voters in New Hampshire accept that or not.
Tom Hudson, would this be something that might cause Mitt Romney problems where you are in California?
Well, absolutely. But I think his response to the issue of his flip-flopping and his, you know, change of position on that, I guess he would say flipping but not flopping. But I think that was an example of his being a very masterful debater. So I think while the issue will be problematic for him and probably continue to be problematic, a lot of our Republican voters, particularly the Republican base that will show up on an early primary election on a date we've never had before, are likely to be, you know, very much pro-life and will be concerned about his past positions. But I think the very frank and honest and impressive way that he handled that really helps him with those voters.
I think Rudolph Giuliani was probably the farthest afield of the 10 on this issue. He began by saying, "I hate abortion," but then he went on to say this.
But ultimately, since it is an issue of conscience, I would respect a woman's right to make a different choice. I support the ban on partial birth abortion. I support the Hyde Amendment. But ultimately, I think when you come down to that choice, you have to respect a woman's right to make that choice differently than my conscience.
Rudolph Giuliani pretty much saying you have to respect a woman's right to choose there. Tom Hudson, you were talking about who votes in the primaries typically. Do you think this strain of a Republican could win primaries across the country?
I think what the Giuliani strategy depends on is a crowded primary. I think he was staking out a very liberal position on this issue and a variety of other issues. I think that's how, if he thinks he can get, you know, 25% of the vote by appealing to the hard left, I think that may be the strategy. If it comes down to there's only two or three candidates, then I think that strategy doesn't work very well.
And Kelly Hurst, would he be then thinking ahead toward a general election where maybe a more moderate Republican could do better against a Democratic candidate?
That's probably very likely. However, I don't think it was that kind of voter that was watching very closely last night. You have to remember that our audience was primary voters. And I think the kind of Republican voter going out to vote in a primary may have a problem with that.
All right, there's the story from National Public Radio. These two political consultants are trying to sort out how important abortion is going to be for the two who seem to have it as the biggest liability in their bag of issues. Mitt Romney, it's a lesser liability for him because he can continue to assert that he's pro-life, but he simply changed his mind more recently on that issue. Rudolph Giuliani, that's a different story here. You know, what I wonder about is whether or not voters are willing to do a calculation here and say, well, look, if he emerges as the candidate during these primaries, we're going to have to vote for him because he'll be the only choice we have. I'm wondering if GOP voters are going to make that calculation or whether there are more single issue voters than I think there are who will say, regardless of whether or not he's got a great chance of winning, regardless of any other issues he may advocate that I agree with, as long as he's pro-choice, I'm not going to vote for him. Are you one of those voters? What they call a single-issue voter when it comes to the life issue? It trumps all other issues. All other points of agreement are essentially irrelevant if your candidate, the person who gets your vote, isn't pro-life. If so, why? If not, I want to know why not. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Stephen St. Louis sent this email. He says, I have noticed that any time a quote-unquote pro-life Democrat wants to run for president or obtain some form of party leadership, he becomes pro-choice over time. These include former Vice President Al Gore, Dick Gephardt, Dick Durbin, to list just a few. We could add there, of course, Joe Biden, Bill Clinton. The list does go on. And Steve concludes, I guess that they were ignorant when they were first elected to government. So much to sticking to one's principles and beliefs. Thank you very much, Steve. Yeah, Biden explained it by saying he was only 29 years old. I was young. I was foolish. Now I've learned more, and I'm pro-choice. Well, look, the argument could also be made the same way in the GOP, although the flip-flops are not as prominent, but that's what Mitt Romney's being accused of. Hey, the minute this guy wants to be president, he becomes pro-life. But it's true, the higher one rises in the echelons of either party, the greater the pressure appears to be to adopt that party's general position on abortion. Republican or Democrat. Matt calls from Florida. Hi, Matt.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
I got a couple of things. One about Al Sharpton and one about this one.
Sure.
After listening to Joseph Biden, I stand by how I characterized... why do I have so much problems with names? He sounds to me, Joseph Biden either way, sounds to me more like he's an octopus squirting out ink to cover his tracks.
What do you mean by that, Matt?
Well, I listened to that. I've heard that comment before on Meet the Press, because you can go to MSNBC.com and watch the entire thing anymore. So if I miss it, I can always go there and watch it. And I didn't understand what he said then either. And now that you replayed it, I still don't. It sounds to me like there's an amount of doublespeak in there, whereas Giuliani, you can almost grasp what he's saying. You know, he's going to toe the line. No matter what comes down the line, I'm going to be able to work with it. And Joseph Biden's going on about, okay, this is why I changed my mind. And at least, like you said, at least Giuliani's, he's being genuine. He's pro-choice, and he's going to run with it.
Hang on there for a second, Matt. Yeah. So I know you have something you wanted to say about the Sharpton-Romney issue, too. You listen to Biden and you hear obfuscation. You hear kind of the smoke screen of saying, I want to be able to say I'm kind of against abortion because I'm a Roman Catholic, but I've come to this position on Roe, and it seems to be the best possible solution in this very pluralistic society we live in. But by comparison, you commend Giuliani because at least he's being up front.
Yeah, at least specific. He's up front with what he's got in mind. And he can show you why. I mean, you may not agree with him, but he can show you why. Now, every time I've heard Joseph Biden talk about this, he talks about it in kind of a... it's funny. It sounds like I'm in an evangelical church and someone's trying to explain to me why it is they believe. It's very similar to that. I've got this gut feeling that it's wrong, but you know what? This law thing... where it comes down, it's really strange to listen to him talk about it.
You know what struck me, Matt, was to hear him talk about Roe, he made it sound as though Roe really didn't decide that a woman had a right to abort her child at any time during the pregnancy. He made it sound like Roe was, we have a sliding scale of viability, and we're trying to come to a compromise between those who want to protect the unborn and those who don't. I don't know. I've read Roe, and it looks to me like there was no compromise whatsoever. There's no protections for the unborn whatsoever in Roe.
There isn't, but the rhetoric has been for years that there are limits. There were limits put in Roe v. Wade itself, because I used to believe that, and a number of people in churches that I used to go to years ago believed that as well, believed that there was a cutoff point that was written into that particular decision, and the reality is there's not.
You would think a U.S. senator would have a greater grasp of a Supreme Court decision than the average person. You wanted to say something about Sharpton, and then I got a question for you.
Yeah. With Sharpton, now I'm looking here, I don't know if you realize it, but you can actually listen to that debate between Sharpton and Hitchinson. It's on, I'll send you guys the link if you wanted to. So it's like 2 hours long, but I'll bet it's going to be very interesting because the summary says that he did a very good job, Sharpton did. But I'm curious as to why, when these books come out and atheists are going across the country with their book signings and their debates, why it is, once again, if I'm listening to this, I would rather it not be Sharpton. I would rather it be one of our guys.
Oh, sure. It would be nice to have somebody like John Warwick Montgomery taking on Chris Hitchens on this case.
I'm throwing that out there again as a bomb. I think that we have some of the most talented, some of the smartest, greatest people that could do these things very well, and we just I can't figure out why we're not in that.
Okay, Matt, one question for you. Are you a one-issue voter, single-issue voter?
I would hate to have to be a single-issue voter. I'm going to try to dig through to see if anybody's going to talk about any other issues, but right now abortion seems to be a big deal. So at this particular moment, I have to be. I don't want I used to think that, okay, well, Giuliani would be good, but listening to him talk about, we're going to put this on a board and we're going to go down the flow chart until we reach this particular moment, makes me think, listen, I need somebody in there that's going to not just toe the line, because we got other issues that you can't toe the line with either.
Matt, thank you very much. Thanks for your comments and answering my questions and for listening in Florida. What about the rest of you? Yeah, Giuliani does often sound like, well, this is the way things are. It's a very bureaucratic response. This is the way things are. And if they change, then they do. I mean, that's how he sounds on the issue of Roe. It's a constitutional right. But if the court overturns it, it overturns it. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. This is, when I say bureaucratic response, it's kind of that stating the status quo as though, you know, this is what there is, and there's nothing I can do about it. Sorry. He's running for president. He's running for president. It's not very encouraging to hear someone who's running for president saying, oh, by the way, just in advance so you know, when I get elected, there's nothing I can do about it. We like to at least hear them say that they think there's something they can do about it. Well, are you excited by the current crop of GOP presidential candidates? There are 10 of them to choose from. You know, we brought up former Tennessee Senator Fred Thompson's name a few weeks ago when he had announced that he has lymphoma, and everyone was saying, aha, he's getting ready to run. He's getting ready to run. And I was surprised by his popularity with you, our listeners. Are you still excited about a Thompson candidacy? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's a story from National Public Radio on the intrigue of Republican voters with the possibility of Fred Thompson throwing his hat into the ring in 2008.
When politicians are thinking about seeking higher office, they often spend their early speeches introducing themselves to the voters.
Will you please give a warm Orange County and Lincoln Club welcome to Senator Fred Thompson?
But Fred Thompson was every bit as familiar to the GOP activists in this ballroom as the Law and Order theme song that played as he walked to the stage. Americans may know him best as fictional New York City DA Arthur Branch, but in this crowd, he was just as much the real-life former senator and reliable conservative. Last night's speech was casual, low-key, and stuck to traditional broad Republican themes. For instance, Democrats who want to raise taxes.
That's their solution. And we have to defend the sound policies that have worked for us so often and so consistently in this country. You wouldn't think you'd have to make the lower tax case again. But you have to make it every day in Washington, D.C.
Then there's what America can teach other nations about freedom and prosperity.
We need to promote things like the rule of law, market economies, and free trade. Any country that's ever tried that has prospered. Any country that hasn't has not.
And Thompson took the long view in discussing America's role in this post-9/11 world.
Hopefully, the people on the forces of civilization realize that they're fighting against the forces of nihilism and destruction and darkness, who is going to need to stand firm and stand strong and stand united if it's not the United States of America?
Every Lincoln Club member we spoke to had a similar reaction to Thompson's speech.
For a guy who's not sure whether he's running, it sounds a lot like he's running.
Chip Hanlon said he's uncommitted to any candidate right now, but he understood Thompson's appeal.
You know, having more than a few Republican friends, that there are those that are a little hungry for someone who's more traditionally conservative across the board, right? So I think there's certainly an opportunity there for someone like Fred Thompson. How big is that opportunity? We'll see.
Two recent polls showed Thompson in second place, just a few points behind frontrunner Rudolph Giuliani. And surprisingly, both polls showed Thompson taking more votes away from Giuliani than from more conservative candidates like former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney or Senator John McCain. There was no one we spoke to who didn't want Thompson to run.
It would be exciting. It absolutely would.
Said Lincoln Club member Karen Lugo. She not only liked his speech, she liked his undeniable central casting qualities, the broad-shouldered 6'6" frame, the voice like rolling thunder.
I could see someone tonight that would, like President Reagan, look Gorbachev in the eye and say, this is the line, don't cross it. I really felt tonight that he's the kind of individual that could do that.
But Fred Thompson dropped no hint last night of whether he'll take the plunge. He's previously said he'd announce his decision in June or July. In an interview on Fox News, he once acknowledged that he hasn't had to battle for the opportunities that have come his way. "I've never beaten down a lot of doors in my life," he said, "but occasionally doors have opened to me and I had sense enough to walk through them." Another door may be opening now for Thompson, because a lot of Republican voters think the 10 choices they have just aren't enough. Ina Jaffe, NPR News, Newport Beach, California.
You know, I don't know that it's... Are you still excited about this? I mean, a couple weeks ago, we raised the Fred Thompson name with you guys as a possibility when everyone else was, and I was really surprised at your response. I think we took somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 14 calls of people saying, really excited. So are you hot, cold, lukewarm on the possibility of Fred Thompson running for president? I don't think it's that voters don't think there are enough choices. I think they're looking for a combination of two things. Somebody who's right on the issues and can get elected. That's not a big... There's not too much to ask for. And in the front runners they have right now, you've got Rudolph Giuliani, in no particular order, Rudolph Giuliani, who to many GOP voters is wrong on one big issue, maybe the issue that decides it for them, life. And he might be, and he certainly might be electable. You've got John McCain, who might be electable, but of course also has compromised on embryonic stem cell research. Again, the life issue. And then you have Mitt Romney, who has recently come around to the right position on that big, crucial life issue, but he's a Mormon. And they're a little leery of that, too. And somebody says, Fred Thompson? Where I don't have to hold my nose on any of those issues? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. DB's up, calling from his car. Hi, DB.
Hi, Todd. Hey, yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, I'm still pretty excited about Fred Thompson. I have to admit, I'm always a little bit reluctant about any political candidate. I don't quite trust any of them, but I am pretty excited about him because the other choices we've been offered just aren't, you know, holding up to what I think Republican values should be, and especially conservative values, and what I consider important issues, the most important being any of the life issues, related issues, and there's a lot of them now, and they're manifold. But I think the thing that excites me the most about this is I was really looking at third-party candidates until he came along, because I feel like a lot of the Republican candidates that were offered the last few elections, especially against Clinton, were lackluster. They didn't have much personality, the ability to communicate themselves. And I don't think it's about personality. I think that the candidate has to be about the quality and the beliefs and the consistency of the candidate. But the candidate needs to be able to communicate why those values are important and be able to clearly speak to the American people. And I think Fred Thompson's got a chance of doing that.
So while you're not voting for the personality, it sure doesn't hurt.
No, I don't think it hurts because I think the values are most important. But if you can't communicate those values, if you can't communicate why we're doing what we're doing, I've supported George Bush in a lot of ways, and I still do, and I would vote for him again. But my biggest concern has not because he's not eloquent. Obviously, he's not, but not everybody is. But he's not. I don't think that his administration has always clearly identified what those values are and why we're doing what we're doing. And I think the American people need to be constantly communicated with by their leadership to explain why we're doing what we're doing and why we're not going to compromise on those issues.
All right. Thank you very much, DB. You know, that's the comparison that a lot of people are making. They're saying you've got George Bush, who's right on some of these issues, but he's kind of got a deer in the headlights look when he tries to explain it. Then you got a guy like Fred Thompson coming along, the steely-jawed guy there. We'll talk more about this after the break. It's audio open lines, issues, etc.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We may not think we were like Paul. We were exactly like Paul. We hated God. We were his enemy. Whether as an infant, through baptism, God converted us, or as an adult later on through the Word, it doesn't matter. Nobody is different than the Apostle Paul prior to conversion. And all conversions are like the Apostle Paul. No decision except God's decision.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
Here's a special AM850 KFUO salute to our day sponsor on this Thursday, May 10th, 2007, Lucille Love Camp. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to AM850 KFUO in honor of being able to listen to KFUO for 71 years and for God's many blessings. Once again, we say thank you to Lucille Love Camp of Jacksonville, Illinois, today's AM850 KFUO day sponsor.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Kim Troby, sitting in for Bob Dittmer. A parents group is educating doctors about the joy of raising kids with Down syndrome. They hope to reverse the trend of aborting babies thought to have Downs and counter a new recommendation that all pregnant women be tested for the condition. Josh Montez has the voices of parents who chose life and are glad they did.
My name is Zoa Ito. I want to tell you about the person I am.
That's 11-year-old Sarah, a Downs child, speaking in front of a room full of medical professionals. She was recently featured in the New York Times as part of a new campaign to help doctors understand that when they tell parents to expect a Downs baby, that doesn't automatically lend to an abortion. Lucy Talbot is with Families Exploring Down Syndrome, or FEDS.
Sometimes they're not giving the parent the good information along with some of the negative things that the child may be facing, and we just really feel that this isn't fair. It's not fair to the new parent.
Earlier this year, the American College of OBGYNs recommended that all babies be screened for Downs. Life groups were rightly worried because 90% of Downs diagnosed babies are aborted. Fed stepped in to teach doctors how to offer hope instead of abortion. Dr. Gene Rudd with the Christian Medical Association hopes that message sticks.
I think there will be many doctors who listen to this message and think about how they practice medicine differently. Once they have personal experience with someone who has Down syndrome, been exposed to those families and see that it can be a very rewarding experience.
FEDS type support groups are growing in every state. For Family News in Focus, I'm Josh Montez.
FEDS is affiliated with the Changing Lives program of the National Down Syndrome Society. These support groups are also taking their message to third-year medical students who are in college, hoping they can influence students before they become doctors. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
Pastor Michael Walder of Good Shepherd Collinsville will be our guest next time on the Bible Study for Revelation 15 here on AM850 KFUO, Clayton, St. Louis. Issues, etc. Regular guest Pastor John Pless is the author of our Book of the Month for May titled Word God Speaks to Us. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can read an excerpt of this Bible study on our website, issuesetc.org. What's the relationship between the Word of God and the work of the Holy Spirit? Find out with Word God Speaks to Us, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May.
All right, we're asking the question whether or not you're still excited by a Fred Thompson possibility in 2008. He hasn't announced yet, but a couple of weeks ago when we raised the question, you were very excited. Our listeners were very excited. Of course, he's making the rounds. He's speaking publicly. We heard just a few minutes ago in that piece from National Public Radio, one of the persons who heard him speaking at the Lincoln Club saying, for a guy who isn't running, he sure sounds like he's running. Are you excited about it? DB called before the break and said, yeah, here's a guy who can articulate the right positions. He's still excited. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio this Thursday, the 10th of May. Issues, etc@kfuo.org. In Lombard, Illinois, Chantry's on the line. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon. I have a question because I wasn't there with you, I guess, a week or two ago, whenever you had presented his name before, and this is the first time I've heard of him running.
Oh, really? Well, he's not official yet, but people think he's going to run. Go ahead.
Right. And so I'd like to hear a little bit from you on if we know what his positions are, what are they, and is there anything, you know, that we should be aware of that may be a negative for him? And I would be really excited if he was a potential, you know, candidate, like I think on the PR announcement, they compared him to Ronald Reagan, or or one of these. So I think it would be really good if he had solid positions and the personality that he does.
So at first blush for you, Chantry, you're excited about a Fred Thompson possibility.
That's correct.
All right, Chantry, thank you. Thanks for listening up there in Lombard. Okay, as far as I know, and I glean much of what I know about Fred Thompson, and we got to talk here about his career as a senator, okay? As far as I know, he is pretty much mainstream Republican. He's right on the life issues. And then, to me, that's the biggest issue. Once you get past this one and gay marriage, you really have issues where Christians can disagree. Christians of goodwill can disagree. Beyond that, I'm not too terribly concerned. Now, I think you heard in the piece from National Public Radio his positions on the war, such as they are. He's being kind of vague. He's talking, as that piece pointed out, in generalities, which is what you expect from someone who has not yet decided if they're going to run. So he seems to be right on the life issue and on the gay marriage issue. So Chantry's excited. Kia in Birmingham, Alabama writes this. The question for all these pro-lifers is, why are you pro-life? It should not be because of political affiliation. One is pro-life because they believe that there is a life present in the womb and the act of abortion destroys life. They believe that. It's a fact. It's in fact murder of an unborn child. Therefore, there can never be justification for it, not even the woman's choice. One who holds the conviction that this is murder will never accept abortion as a choice. Now, she's speaking there, it sounds like, directly to Giuliani's position of, well, it's wrong, I hate it. You're right, Kia. The next question should be, why? Why do you think it's wrong? What's wrong about it, and why do you hate it so? Kia says, these men have no conviction, and I would rather abstain from the privilege for which my ancestors fought and died than cast a vote for someone who is as unscrupulous as they. If you're wrong about life, how can you be right about anything else? What else is there? Well, Kia, I think, Jeff, would you put her in the category of the single-issue voter with that email? I would. Okay, I agree. If you're wrong about life, it, for me personally as a voter, it doesn't really matter what else you believe. You can't win me over with your other positions if you're wrong on the life issue. Although people can be 99% right and wrong on that crucial 1%. They can be 99% right on all other issues. That's the dilemma of the one-issue voter, isn't it? You find yourself faced with people who you agree with 99%, but on the crucial 1% that is life, they're wrong. Lowell in New Mellie, Missouri writes, I've been told that when you hear the word but in a sentence, you can forget whatever comes before it. You know, that's a good rule of thumb. I'm going to have to remember that. I'm a lifelong Lutheran, but we hear that a lot from our listeners, from people. I'm a lifelong Lutheran, but. So he says, I've been told that when you hear the word but in a sentence, you can forget whatever comes before it. I agree with that statement, and it seems to me that Giuliani is really saying he's for abortion. Okay, Giuliani says, I hate abortion, I don't like abortion, I don't favor abortion, but. When you can say that something is bad, but I still support it, isn't he really saying that he supports abortion? Writes Lowell. So what I'm trying to say is, even if someone says it's bad and wrong, but I still support it, that they're really saying that they support it. Lowell says, I would like to think that it would come down to more than just that one position to earn my vote, but that's a position that would cost a person my vote. Lowell, thank you very much for listening. Thanks for the email. What about the rest of you? You hear Rudolph Giuliani saying, I disapprove of abortion. I think it's wrong, but I support a woman's right to do it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Next on Audio Open Lines, a CNN report on a controversy over a mosque construction in a Florida town.
God has not given me the spirit of fear.
Pastor O'Neill Dozier has always been blunt about his opinion of Islam.
How would you characterize the Islamic faith?
I characterize the Islamic faith as an evil, cruel, dangerous faith.
Pastor Dozier has been crusading for months to keep a mosque from going up in his Pompano Beach, Florida neighborhood. Now he's got an ally, a man who's actually suing to stop it.
Well, this seems like a good fight.
The ally is Rodney Wright, a bit of a mystery man. CNN's been unable to reach him. We found this video of him at a zoning meeting about the mosque last year. Wright lives a few blocks from where it's supposed to be built, and his parents own a vacant lot right next to it. In his lawsuit, Wright claims the goal of the mosque is, quote, to spread radical Islam throughout the United States far and wide through its relations with known terrorist supporters and groups. Is this your goal?
No. Just the opposite of that. It's actually promoting understanding of Islam.
The mosque's prayer leader, Hassan Sabri, says its current location a few miles away is no longer big enough. He insists that for years his Muslim community has helped the homeless and been a good neighbor, even participating in ecumenical prayer services. Wright's lawsuit says that's all a ruse, and Pastor Dozier echoes that suspicion.
Every mosque is indeed a breeding ground for terrorists.
Oh, come on.
Oh, no. We have documentation showing that even this mosque here, the Islamic mosque of South Florida, have brought in many spokesmen for terrorists.
In part, the lawsuit claims Imam Sabri invited to his mosque a speaker with ties to Al-Qaeda.
You have a history that relates back to Al-Qaeda?
That's nonsense. If these people are really true Americans and they care about the security and they see somebody, if they think that I am connected to Al-Qaeda, like they say, I encourage them to go to the FBI and to get this information.
We've checked with the FBI several times. CNN has asked the FBI whether it has any evidence of terror links of any kind involving the imam or the mosque's current location. The answer each time has been no.
Ronald Wright's attorney Larry Klayman told us his client did not want to speak with us. But Klayman says citizens cannot count on the government for protection.
We're like, you know, Revolutionary War days. We have to have citizens, concerned citizens, come forward to mount their own community defense in a peaceful and legal way.
The city has already approved the new mosque, and the Muslim community plans to break ground this summer, lawsuit or not. Susan Candiotti, CNN, Pompano Beach, Florida.
All right, there's the story. If they were trying to build a mosque in your neighborhood, what would you do? Now, the question there is raised of whether or not it's going to involve terrorist activity. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, just the nicest group of Muslims in the world you ever wanted to meet, and with no particular concerns about terrorism, would you want a mosque built in your neighborhood? I live in a small town, but it's a town that's growing exponentially. Everything's going up. They're building businesses. They're putting in the big box stores. They're putting in the little moms and pops. They're putting up houses. Not a lot of churches. Churches take a little longer to build, but what would you do if some local Muslims wanted to build a mosque in your neighborhood? For that matter, do you want a church built in your neighborhood? There are many people who object to even Christian churches being built in their neighborhood, not because they're against religion. They kind of make Sunday mornings a little busy sometimes. Would you fight the construction of a mosque or a church? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us right here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's Audio Open Lines Issues, etc. This Thursday, the 10th of May. Coming up in a little bit, let's see, starting in the third hour of the program, which is only about 15 minutes away, We're going to be reviewing a sermon preached by a regular guest here on the program, Dr. Reed Lessing of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. He's going to be preaching on Jeremiah 24, 1 through 10. We'll review that sermon, typical sermon review here on Issues, etc., in the last hour of the program. So they want to build a mosque in your neighborhood. Would you agree or disagree? Would you say, that's fine? It's not a question of whether or not Muslims should be allowed to build mosques anywhere. You know the old saying, not in my backyard? Well, we'll say, sure, they've got a right to do this or that, in theory, but not in my backyard. How do you feel about that when it comes to a Muslim mosque that might be built, metaphorically speaking, in your backyard? That man down in Florida, he's serious about it. He's brought a lawsuit. 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. Lois is in St. Louis. Hi, Lois.
Good evening. Todd, I would not support it because I care about the souls of human beings. And why would I want to support a mosque where people are going to go and learn about a God that does not exist? It's only a false God. And I want people to know the real God, even the Muslims. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
All right, Lois, thank you very much. What about the rest of you? Her concern is the salvation of souls. She sees no reason as a Christian citizen to support a mosque being built where people will be worshiping and taught about a false God. Is it that simple for the rest of you? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850. Nate is up next. He listens down in Austin. Hi, Nate.
Hey, Todd. Yeah, last I checked, I believe the Muslims are still our neighbors, right?
They are our neighbors.
Okay. So does that mean we can slander them? Because that would seem like something harmful against our neighbor.
What's your...
Every time the preacher at the Florida church was seeming, you know, talking about that they had connections to Al-Qaeda and other things, and it seemed rather slanderous. I mean, since he had no actual evidence, though he claimed to have evidence. But the other thing I have is I would be no more upset about a mosque going next door than I would the Elka church.
All right, Nate, thank you very much. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the big liberal Lutheran church body is what he's talking about there. Okay, let's make it clear that when I ask this question, I'm not saying, would you trump up charges of Al-Qaeda connections to stop a mosque from being built in your neighborhood? I'm not expecting anyone to do that. The question is, would you be opposed to it? If you would, I would like to have asked Lois just a moment ago when she called in, how far would you go in opposing the building of a mosque in your neighborhood? I mean, there's zoning boards that you can talk to. There are campaigns that you can, letter writing, all this kind of stuff. Let's see what Ryan has to say as he waits in his car. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Todd. How you doing?
Doing well.
I was going to go back to, you kind of moved on from the one-issue voter thing, and if I could, it's always curious to me that it seems as though that label is applied to pro-life people. I think the one-issue voter label could also, or is applicable to pro-choice voters as well. We see very much consistency in those who, if they are pro-life, I'm not voting for them. One of the issues for me is, and I follow that very closely because I think pro-choice betrays a worldview, and pro-life betrays your worldview. And if life is important to you from conception on, it will demonstrate itself in the other areas, as well as if you're pro-choice. And some of that is to be, for a person to be foolish enough to fall into categorizing life once a child is removed from the womb completely. I mean, the foolishness of the partial birth abortion is just ridiculous. And to fall on that side and say you're pro-choice, I mean, I'm not much for having a fool as a leader. And if you're that easily fooled and the wool can be pulled over your eyes quickly, I'm not voting for you, because on other issues, you're going to get duped as well.
All right, Ryan, thank you very much. He says, hey, it speaks to one's general judgment. Chuck calls from his car. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how you doing, Todd?
Pretty good.
Okay. My objection to having a mosque in the neighborhood or in my backyard, as you put it, is the noise pollution when they call for prayers four times a day.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
I mean, you know, they are putting pressure on Christian and Catholic churches to keep the bell ringing on Sunday morning down to a minimum. And here you've got not just one day a week, but every day a week that the imam gets up there and calls people to prayer.
Okay, would that be your only objection, Chuck?
Well, as far as I would be concerned, it would be an evangelism opportunity if the Muslims were in the neighborhood.
All right, Chuck, thank you very much. Excellent. Okay, now he raises an actual, this is really an issue. Ask the people of Dearborn, Michigan, what's it like to have mosques in their neighborhoods? They'll tell you, very noisy sometimes because of the calls to prayer. And they've been dealing with noise pollution issues just like Chuck talked about. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Would you approve or disapprove the construction of a mosque in your neighborhood? If so, why? If not, why not? Jean is calling from Florissant. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Yes, I would disapprove, and anywhere, actually, in the U.S., for the simple reason I've read on the Internet, and don't ask me where. I guess people can search it out, but these mosques are training grounds for, I don't know if it's Al-Qaeda, but similar activities, because whoever wrote the article, they several people have had gone to the mosque, infiltrated, if you will, and heard for their own, you know, with their own ears that they were being trained against the U.S. So I consider it a threat. Then as far as, that's all I have to say about that, but I would like to say something about the voting, too.
Go right ahead.
I don't know why no one has brought up Ron Paul. I know he might be sort of a dark horse, but when he was in that GOP debate the other day or week, he won it hands down pretty much. And this also was on the Internet that he did win. And I listened for an hour to his, I guess it was on YouTube or somewhere, to his answers, et cetera. And he was very good, and I've been following Ron Paul for quite a few years, and he is a true blue conservative. He's for life. He's for everything. He's for the Constitution. He's for everything. Now, that might put him a little bit back from getting elected. You know, you have to be electable. But still, he's says what he means, and he means what he says.
Well, Gene, thank you very much. Okay, I took note of Ron Paul during that debate. For a different reason, actually, and I think I mentioned this on the air when we were listening to the various candidates' comments on life and federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. In particular, Ron Paul, when asked, are you in favor of embryonic stem cell research, federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, he didn't approach it as an ethical issue. He said that kind of funding isn't authorized by the Constitution. He approached it as from a legal standpoint or a constitutional standpoint. And when it came to the issue of abortion, I think he also spent a little more time talking about constitutional issues, in fact, states' rights issues, than about the morality or immorality of Roe. When he was asked, would it be a good day or a bad day for America if Roe were overturned? His response was something along the lines of, well, it would be a good day because it would return states' rights to their proper place. Now, he may well be very pro-life, but he sounded to me more like more concerned about the constitutionality of and states' rights issues than he did about the unborn there. My impression was somewhat different than yours, Gene. Thank you very much, at least of Ron Paul's, the way he availed himself of that opportunity during that debate. It's Thursday, May the 10th. Still time for your phone calls or for your email. Issues ETC at KFUO.org or 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, you got to be careful about what you listen to and read on the internet. It's not even a 50-50 proposition when it comes to truth and falsehood. So, are there mosques and schools, Muslim schools, in the United States that are being used as training grounds, especially for young people, in the worldviews and philosophies at the very center of Islamic terrorism? Yes. But that doesn't mean every mosque is. In fact, we talked with Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine. I think he and Serge Trifkovic went to a Muslim school, visited there, and they witnessed firsthand some what they considered to be kind of inflammatory and anti-American rhetoric being taught the kids. Okay, so it does happen. You're right, Gene, it does happen. But not every mosque is doing it. What would be your biggest objection to the Muslims' house of worship going up in your neighborhood? Would it be the noise? Would it be, as one of our callers, Lois, said, the souls that would be lost by the teachings there? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
You know, I don't know about you. I don't think I would want any religious building built next to me. Would you?
Okay. Tell me why.
Well, first of all, as you mentioned, the traffic issue. And it's a selfish reason, but do you really think it increases the value of your house, your home, to live close to a mosque or a synagogue?
You're asking a guy who lives almost nearly off the highway, and I've got places of business all around me, so that bridge was crossed a long time ago. But, well, okay, you know, you could approach it. Do you even want a church? People parking on your street on Sunday morning or Wednesday nights? It used to be. It used to be and is in the older parts of many cities and in small towns. It used to be that churches were nestled, situated right there among the homes. And now, nowadays, it's a little more common to find churches out where you'd find the strip mall. But if you're like Wilkin and you have commercial property very near your home, I don't think it's really likely that there'll be a mosque built in my little town anytime soon, but there's a piece of property right in front of my house, right across the street. It's zoned commercial. And as far as I know, at least according to our zoning restrictions in that little town, if a church wanted it and could afford it, they could get it. If a mosque wanted it and could afford it, they could get it. I can tell you there'd be a lot of reasons why the objections would be raised. The real issue here is why objections should be raised. Tomorrow, Dr. Stephen Hine will join us. We're going to talk about man's many failed attempts to reach God. Sunday night on the program, it's a Mother's Day treat, the influence of Christianity on women. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest. That's live Sunday night from 10 to 11 on 91.7 FM here in St. Louis. When we come back from this break, we'll review a sermon by Dr. Reed Lessing.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.